So nice and pleasant to be with everyone. Spirit Rock is one of my spiritual homes, and it is it's a great pleasure to connect and share. I want to start by just kind of acknowledging that there's a real wonderful heartful way in which we've like leaned into the Zoom situation. At first, I was like, well, it's not the same, but like really creating the access for folks to just Zoom in from wherever has provided such great sangha in a time when it's really necessary. That's my experience, is like it's not the same. And I have been in sangha with people I never would have met before, so I just want to take a minute to acknowledge, Amiko, the work that you're doing with this particular night, and also Spirit Rock's commitment to increasing access. It is significant. It's aligned with my mission as well. Patrick Brown, I use he and they pronouns. I am usually in the Bay, but today I'm on the it's Kumeyaay Nation land, which is in San Diego. I'm here for work, and it's wonderful. I do come to this work through suffering, and tonight I hope to share with you some things that some teachings around the Four Noble Truths, specifically the Third Noble Truth, and like really zooming in on wise intention and wise speech tonight. My teaching style is very relational, and so I hope to connect with you all and provide some spokes. There will be time in the at the end of the time, at the end of our meeting, to actually connect with someone and answer a few prompts that I've put together. If that doesn't suit you, you'll be at choice to participate in a metta practice that I offering. So just naming that ahead of time so you can kind of think about where you might want to be. So the other part of our itinerary is that we will be sitting together for about 25 minutes. And I like to offer folks a short break afterwards in case there's a bio need, but we can, see how long that break is if we need it, 5 minutes or so. And then I'll talk a little bit. I've got some musings and reflections, some teachings to offer. And after that, you will go into either breakout groups or the metta practice. And then we'll close the evening with some Q&A or reflections and feedback, and then some announcements and dedication of merit. So if there's any access needs you have that might help you show up more fully tonight, please do drop them into the chat or let Emiko know, and we'll do our best to accommodate. Just acknowledging technologies. Technologying right now. Okay, there it is. Now I can see it. Wonderful. So I'll take a minute just to invite you. Some people have done this already, but if you would drop in the chat, where are you zooming in from? Where are you located? You might share, how you're feeling showing up to the Sangha tonight. So I'm going to take a minute and drop that in the chat. I just would love to see where people are at. Yeah. Wonderful. This is what I'm talking about. What a wonderful, unique combination of folks. Yeah, thank you so much for showing up tonight. Emiko read a little bit about my introduction, but I wanted to also share that, my commitment to creating more access to the Dharma is because I, as a Bodhisattva, I really feel like the ending of all suffering has to relate to people's individual practice. Like in the hardest moments of my life, the Dharma has really created some spaciousness, and it's really given me some wonderful tools and has reduced my suffering. And so I know how powerful these tools are, and I just want them to be available to most people. And when I started practicing with deep intention 12 years ago, that was not the case. And so I feel like we're moving in the right direction. Zoom is part of that. Spirit Rock has made some big shifts. And the East Bay Meditation Center, if you haven't yet visited them in person or online, I would really encourage you. That we're in deep practice there to create equity and move forward an agenda of really increasing access. So, all right. New Jersey, hey. All right, I'm going to ask folks to find a posture that feels comfortable, but still alert, right? We're not such, I like to think nice long spine, and if you can feel your feet underneath you or your butt in the cushion. Yeah, from this place, we'll just have a couple of deep cleansing breaths. We breathe in through the nose and then out through the mouth. It feels good to lower the gaze or close the eyes a little. You might just to turn your attention inward and notice what your body got to tell you right now. Have another breath in and then out. It might feel good to roll the neck or the shoulders. Really just allowing ourselves to be in the present moment, and our bodies are a great way to get present with ourselves. Rolling the shoulders, turning the torso. Might feel good to squish your fingers and toes. Ah, yes, awareness of the body. Let's have another breath in and out. So for the next 25 minutes, I'll invite the bell to begin, but I want us to just take notice of where our attention is, right? In our practice, we don't strive to completely empty the mind. There will always be thoughts arising, but I do want to encourage us to find an anchor that can hold our attention for this practice period. You might choose the anchor of the breath, right? Noticing the inhalation and exhalation. I will often try to see if I can notice what is the direct midpoint between the two. Or you might just feel the sensations in your belly of expansion, contraction. But a place where you can rest your attention, where it feels like it's focused and concentration is possible. You know, if the breath isn't available to you, I also could invite you to use a single point of attention in the body. You know, maybe where your hands are resting in your lap, just notice that touch point, or where your feet are touching the floor. But having the anchor will support our concentration and focus for this next 20 minutes or so. And as the thoughts arise, and they will, I invite you to notice the thought, but not follow it. Right? We have the option of turning our attention, oh, noticing there's sound in my room. And then I let it go. We don't need to follow that thought and create a whole sense around it, but you can just notice it and then let it pass. It's like a cloud across the sky, like, oh, there's a thought, and then it leaves us. All right, wonderful. So we're going into meditation. I'll ring the bell once to begin and then again to close. You have mostly silent practice today. Taking a moment to notice, where's the attention? If it has wandered from the anchor, then the invitation is to bring it back for concentration and focus, gently reminding ourselves that the practice is to be in sustained attention. We gently invite it back to the single point of attention or the anchor of the breath. I notice our attention has wandered. If it feels helpful, you may take this moment to switch your anchor. If you find it useful to switch from one point of attention to another, or to move from the breath to a sensation in the body, we'll just take a moment to readjust our alignment and continue our meditation and focus just for another little few minutes. Last few minutes of our practice together, Invite us into the practice of loving kindness and metta. Today we'll offer metta to the unknown person. So I'll ask you to call to memory or to mind the image or idea, somebody whose name you may not know, somebody you've encountered in the world. You may have noticed them while driving or seen them at the grocery store. You don't need to know their name, but just to remember kind of what they looked like. And if you can hold an image of them in your mind's eye, I'll offer these prayers and blessings aloud as you repeat them silently to yourself. May this person feel joy and move with ease today. May this person feel safe and be protected from inner and outer harms. May this person feel strong, be healthy in their body, their spirits, and their mind. May they easily remember the interconnectedness of all beings, and may they be free. For your practice. So I think that we are going to go into a short break. So if it's helpful to address some biological needs and maybe just get a glass of water, we'll be back here in about 5 minutes to start. Does that work for you, Emiko? Great. Welcoming folks back. Yeah, it's so pleasant. Wonder if that light is too distracting over there. No, it's fine. Okay. Patrick Brown, I really want to frame a little bit of tonight's Dharma talk and conversation, in a story. When I left Chicago, I was having great professional success. I was doing well. My life was going pretty well. I was very successful in this nonprofit work I was doing around formerly incarcerated folks and women in non-traditional trades. And I had thought a long time about what makes the world better. And I was convinced that policy work wasn't for me, but I wanted to do direct service. And yet, in this nonprofit industrial complex, the burnout is so real because we just extend and extend, to meet the deep needs. And I remember one time I asked my mom, I said, don't you think this is great? I'm so successful. She was like, oh yeah, I think you're doing well. But what about your spirit? What about your like heart? It's like, mom, come on, just be proud. So sure. But it stuck with me in the back of my head. And as I was overextending, because in those roles, sometimes you wear so many hats. I'm the fundraiser and the facilitator and the, connector and it burned me out so terribly that I had to make some really big moves. That's why I moved to California, and the first thing I did was go to Spirit Rock, which I love this story because it's like when I got to California, I was like, wait, what do you do in California? They're like, oh, you go sit in a hill, you don't talk for 7 days. And like, wow. I mean, I knew how to meditate, but it was a thing. And so I went there and my heart broke open, and all of these things that I had kind of like pushed down and like white knuckled my way through things, and the things that I had not wanted to think about or feel started to come up. Because after 3 days, I was like, oh, I've thought about all the things I normally think about. And then the stuff that was stuffed in started to come out, but it came out in such a painful way. It's like, This is so, I'm scared. This is so overwhelming. So I broke my silence and I asked for help. And that was the first time that Larry Yang and Gina Sharp were hosting the retreat, and they, sat with me, and they offered me some of these tools. One of them was blue sky, right? In a moment of overwhelm, can you put your attention towards something so vast and so wide that it makes kind of the challenges you're facing, it inherently makes them a little smaller. Larry would say that if you have a raging bull, in a small pen, it could do a lot of damage, but the wider the pen and bigger the space, your suffering can be held in a larger container, and that will be very helpful to you. And whoo, boy, was that working. Yeah, I tell the story to mention just that, the practices have been so wonderful and have reduced my suffering so much. I love when I teach just to ask the question, why do you practice? You showed up tonight. What is the purpose or the intention of your practice? How has it shown up and maybe decreased your suffering or not? Such a great question. But I want to talk tonight about, the foundation of some of our teachings, particularly in Theravada and Vipassana meditation, around the Four Noble Truths. That my suffering, while unique to my story, is not less than other folks' suffering. Right? The fact that there is suffering in the world and the attachment that we can sometimes form, attachment to expectations or our wants and perceived needs, that's the origin of a lot of our suffering as we move through the world. As I moved through Chicago as a young child, I had a lot of suffering. I lost my father very early. There was a lot of conflict in my family. I did not have a lot of resources for what I needed. And so my suffering felt very like, why me? How did I end up in this condition and yet other folks don't have the suffering and this comparison mind, So I just point to the fact that the universal suffering that we all experience can feel individual, and yet our practice invites us to notice that it's actually present for every being. And that was a big pivotal moment for me when I realized that, oh, as unique as it seems, I have shared connection. We all have suffering. The second noble truth around the origin of this suffering, right? That it's actually possible to point to and know where the suffering can come from, right? This analysis, this attachment to expectation or my comparing mind. I often point towards the teaching of the second arrow that, yes, everyone will be struck by a first arrow of suffering in the world, but in what ways are we contributing to the suffering, right? Is this the suffering that leads to the end of suffering? Or in fact, are we positioned to actually feel more suffering as I wallow? Oh, like I lost that job and why me? And like that person doesn't deserve a job as much as I do. Like there are ways in which we contribute to the adding of the suffering, right? The suffering that leads to more suffering, the why, the attachment. So I lived there for a long time, and I think it's wonderful to explore in our practice, like how do we move away from that? And then there's this third noble truth that there's an end to the suffering, which I've thought about for a long time. I think as a queer person, coming up in the 90s, I was like, there was a lot of suffering in a lot of ways in which I felt marginalized. There was a lot of ways I felt attacked as a black person, as a black and queer person. And, to know that there was an end of suffering, I was so curious. What does that mean? Is that, are we talking about the end of my time in this body? But in my studies and in my practice, I've noticed that, what if the end of suffering is actually momentary? That the suffering, in fact, you can have a moment where there's hardly any suffering, even maybe no suffering in a moment. And what if the practice really invites us to notice and be mindfully aware and present for those moments? I think a lot of us have had times when we've like felt really in the flow or very aligned, and our practice invites us and allows us to be present in the moment and just be like, oh, this is it. And maybe it's fleeting, maybe it leaves and returns, but I've always been curious about the ending of suffering, if it's really complete, like are we all awakening in this lifetime? And if not, maybe it's momentary. So then he leads us to the fourth noble truth and this beautiful teaching pathway that's been offered. Like when I asked the question of why do you practice, so many of us are trying to reduce suffering. And one of the ways we do that is by creating a better condition. We try to create wholesome conditions, right? We try to have practices that allow us to be more aligned with our values and practices so that we reduce suffering. The practices are, wise view, wise thoughts, wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood, effort, wise mindfulness, and that these are all endeavors that you can actually practice with. So tonight I really want to land on, I'm going to start with wise speech because it's one that's very alive in this moment. So what is wise speech? From the teachings we're given the instructions that it's, to avoid lying, to saying things that are not true, right? Wise speech is a lot about taking into consideration, maybe not just telling false truths, but also, not telling the whole truth or flavoring how you communicate so that you can get the response that you're looking for. Some people say it's like no lying, but really it's more than that. I think about my social media presence and what it's like to, say yes or no and have comments. I'm so quick to judge in this very like flat two-dimensional world of Instagram and Facebook. Like, what would happen if I were to comb through all of my posts and all of my responses and just notice like, oh, am I being truthful here? Or have I put my finger on the scale and the way I'm communicating to create and elicit a certain response, because that would be not wise speech. I invite folks to kind of consider for yourself, like, how are you, what are the ways in which you are not all the way honest? The second invitation for wise speech is like to avoid slander, right? To be mindful of the words that we share and how they cause impact, but to avoid slandering others. And the third invitation is to avoid harsh language. What is served in the purpose of using hard language or even slandering somebody? There certainly are places in my life where I've been the recipient of something really unfortunate or something that causes anger, and I can notice anger arise, right? And then the more I practice, the more I feel like I have the capacity to respond instead of react. I might still be frustrated. I might still need to say the thing that's harsh. But like, it has to be a choice. And so I invite us to think about, as I was a young man, I used to go to this underage night at a gay bar when I was in college, Madison, Wisconsin, I mean, in Green Bay, Wisconsin. It was called Zaz. And I was from Chicago. And so it was a little, it's a little small towny for me. But I just remember every night we'd be there. We'd be standing outside, like waiting to get in, and these trucks would drive by, and it's like they would throw bottles and they would call us names. And I just remember that harsh language and like the impact that it had. I knew they were jerks. I knew it was nothing about me. It was mostly about them. And yet, before I really had this practice of being able to be aware of my emotions, I just felt that harsh language, and it hit me to the core. I think there are many places where we get misidentified for our gender, or we may get, harshly judged for who we choose to love. And I just have so much compassion for us in the queer communities for like how we actually respond to harsh language. The last one, last invitation for how to avoid, how to practice wise speech is like, can you avoid idle chatter? I was like, wait a minute. I'm like a gay guy. Like, what? Like, God, no gossip. Like, come on. It's part of what I saw in the community. It's part of my identity. I get to gossip. Girl, please. Like, and in fact, my devotion to my practice really allowed me to like turn the heat up on my practice. And that's what my teaching and my invitation for you is tonight. Which of these is very alive for you? How could you turn up the heat in your practice? Before you come to the next Rainbow Sangha, BIPOC Voices, like, could you practice and comb through the way that you engage? Maybe your text messages and just notice, like, oh, Is there any like untruth here, slander, harsh language, or idle chatter? And what would it be like if you noticed it and you'd say, I'm going to practice, I'm going to delete that for now. In between now and the next, like, could you just turn up the heat a little bit? You know, sometimes I feel intimidated because if I were to do all of these Eightfold Path, I would feel very, it feels overwhelming. But it doesn't feel overwhelming if I'm in community and Sangha and I'm invited to practice something just a little bit. So I ask you just to kind of take a minute and consider this. Right. So, you know, the wise speech as a practice, similar to the metta, is something that I've worked with for a very long time. As I mentioned, you know, the cessation of suffering or the capacity to respond instead of react, those conditions will really start to shift, you know, how we move through the world. When I'm more aware of my feelings and how that informs my choices, you know, there's a freedom there that I didn't experience before. When I was young, it was very much, you know, you hurt me, I hurt you. You yell at me, I yell back at you. And now there's this like expansion. You yell at me, and I notice what's coming up for me. And I notice if I can have compassion for you. And I remind myself that I too have been angry. And then I still might be a choice to yell back, but at least it's been, there's a freedom in this. And isn't that just like the wonderful nature of our practice? You know, if we had more time, I would invite everybody to really share kind of the impact of your practice over the years and the places where you're learning and stretching and growing. But yeah, I think it's my gift for some that I offer to many and some accept, which is like the invitation to turn the heat up on your practice. People often tell me they know that I have a very deep, you know, daily practice, and they, oh, I should be meditating more. Oh, you know, when the worst thing that ever happened to me in my whole entire life, my mother's passing happened, people came to me and said, oh, I'm so glad you have your practice to turn to. Yes. And it's not, the practice doesn't help us avoid or circumvent the suffering. It actually calls us to come into connection with it and recognize it. So yes, I'm grateful for it, but please don't misunderstand that it's not easy. And I think I'll land on this point of when you turn the heat up on your practice, if you make a commitment and you share it with a friend or an accountability buddy, hey, I'm really working on my wise speech for the next week or two. Like you do that, and next week you say, oh, did that have an impact? It kind of did. Let me try something else. This is the journey that I was on for the last 10 years or so, just trying new practices on to try and reduce the suffering. And the impact has been really powerful. So for us queer folks that are looking for ways to reduce the suffering, there is a pathway in the Dharma for us to follow. So I'm going to pause there. We're going to move into this choice point. You could choose to be in a dyad with a partner, and you would explore. I have two prompts I'd like you to consider. The first one is like, what would it look like to turn the heat up on your practice? You know, where do you already know you could be more devoted or more consistent or more rigorous in your practice that might show a benefit after a week or two? And you could share that with your partner both ways. And also the second question is, you know, what does wise speech mean to you? Is there a particular area in your life, whether it's email or on the phone or in person, you know, what does wise speech look like for you? So those are two prompts that you could choose to answer or not. And I think we want to start a process, Emiko, right, to ask folks to add to their name. The instruction that Emiko gave before was to scroll over those three dots over your image and then click rename, and you'll put an asterisk in front of your name if you would like to go in a breakout room and be paired up for that prompt. Or if you rename yourself and put a pound sign, Then we'll know that you are interested in staying in the main room, and I'll offer a more complete metta practice tonight. Because who doesn't need more metta? Are those instructions pretty clear? Any questions, comments, feedback before we make this choice? Here we are for metta together. Metta is this loving kindness practice that's pretty it's foundational to kind of our Theravada and Vipassana meditation. It's this idea that you can generate loving kindness feelings, and there's practice for how to share them, like broadly. And so what I would love to do now is just invite us into a practice. You try it on, see if it fits. I'll ask you to find a posture that feels comfortable, but still alert. If it feels good to lower the gaze or close the eyes and just get grounded and present in this moment. The practice of metta is focused in loving kindness, and the more you cultivate it, the more you practice it, you find your way into accessing this really inexhaustible sense that there is joy, even in the most difficult times, there is loving kindness. And as part of our practice, it becomes very accessible to us, right? That there are times when, in the midst of suffering and overwhelm, it actually is helpful for us to turn our attention. And metta, loving kindness practice, does that so well for me. Doesn't mean that I'm ignoring the suffering. I will return, I will come back. But in moments of sheer overwhelm, when I just can't bear it anymore, I often turn to metta because it can really help us to create a container that's more has more capacity for our suffering, if you balance it with loving kindness. So what I'm going to do is offer this kind of traditional process. And so you start by offering metta to yourself. And this can be tricky or challenging. Sometimes it's easier for us to show love for another than it is to show love for ourselves for lots of reasons. But I invite you to just try it on if it feels accessible. Notice if you could bring an image to your mind's attention of what you were like as a child. You might think of yourself laughing or dancing, and just notice if there's anything happening in your heart or your chest. And if there were joyful moments as a child, you might hold that in your imagination. And when you feel that sensation of loving kindness and a little bit of joy or connection, you actually can like emanate that energy. And so I'll invite you to repeat these phrases to yourself silently as I say them aloud. May I feel joy. May I move with ease today and in this world. Just let that settle for a minute, focusing on ourselves as a version of ourselves as a child or laughing. Can we invite that child and that version of ourselves to really be in joy and what all of that means? Can we move with ease today? We invite ourselves to, may I feel safe? May I feel protected from outer harm and inner harm. Just allowing that to kind of resonate and move through our bodies to notice what it feels like to wish ourselves this protection and this safety. May we feel healthy. May we feel strong in our bodies, our spirit, our mind, allowing us to send well wishes to ourselves for this strength, right, in our bodies and perfectly imperfect. our spirit and our mind, may not always be where we want it to be, but can we be wishing ourselves loving kindness from those places? And then we move into, may we be aware of the interconnectedness of all beings. And may we be free. Yeah, this idea that we can be free in our spirit and our bodies and our minds. What does that freedom look like? Can we offer loving kindness in a way that really includes the freedom that we want to experience, that we seek in this world? And this thing about interconnectedness is a place that we can remind ourselves and be, it can be familiar. So can we, in loving kindness, can we remember that I am connected to you are connected to we and beyond? This practice is very like loving kindness based. So from here, we'll move to the benefactor, often referred to as someone that's easy to love. It might be a pet, it might be a friend, it might be a family member or partner, but someone who just is really invested in your well-being, who is a very easy to access when you wish them well. So I ask you to pull an image of them to your mind's eye and attention, and from that place, just notice what it's like to offer them these phrases. May they feel joy. May they move with ease. May they be safe. May they be protected from inner and outer harm. Just allow that wish to like really resonate in the body and then almost like send it outward towards that person. In their mind's eye, think, may this person feel healthy and may they be strong in their body, their spirit, and their mind. May this benefactor, may they easily remember the interconnectedness of all beings. And may they be free. Yeah, just notice what it's like in your body, what that awareness is. How is your breath? Next in the sequence, we would offer metta to the unknown person. I know that we did that already. We might do it again. You might be able to think of another person who you saw today or recently. You might comb through your recent experiences and notice, I don't know that person's name, but they did catch my attention. Just imagining what they look like in your mind's eye and then offering them these praises. May this person feel joy and may they move with ease. Little as I know them, may they be safe and protected from any inner and outer harm. May they feel healthy and strong in their body, their spirit, and their mind. Just literally imagining them feeling strong. May they easily remember the interconnectedness of all beings, and may they be free. Just noticing what it's like to wish that others might find freedom and liberation. The next in this series is we offer metta and loving kindness to the difficult person. And this is careful, we don't have a lot of support in this space right now, and so we don't go for the most difficult person, right? You might just comb through your recent experiences and notice if there's a person who maybe you've just been out of sync with for a minute, or Maybe there was a disagreement, but you know that you're meaningful to each other and you'll probably find your way back. But just finding someone that might be difficult in this moment. I would say on a scale of 1 to 10, let's think of a 3 or a 4. So taking a minute to pull an image of that person towards your mind. Just notice what it's like to be generous and to offer this loving kindness to someone who maybe you're not super connected with this moment. So as the image forms in your imagination and your mind, you offer these prayers. May this person feel joy, and may they move with ease. May this person feel safe and be protected from inner and outer harms. May this person feel healthy. May they be strong in their bodies, in their spirit, and in their mind. May this person easily remember that we are all connected, all beings are interconnected. And may this person get free. And so, for the last level of instruction, we're actually going to offer loving kindness to all beings. So, just imagine yourself as kind of a center of loving kindness, and that as you offer these prayers, they might move externally from your heart space into the room you're in, into the building you're in, to the outside, into the sky, and into the earth, into the water. Just imagine that you're radiating like a beacon, a sense of loving kindness, and that that energy is going to touch every being in all directions without exception. So just holding in your heart that image and then saying, may all beings feel joy and move with ease through the world. May all beings be safe and protected from inner and outer harm. May all beings feel healthy, strong in body, strong in spirit, strong in mind. May we, all beings, easily remember the interconnectedness of us all. And may we be free. Thank you so much for your practice. Just a few more things before the folks come back. Two things. One, the prayers that I offered are, they're familiar, they're traditional, there's phrases you can use. And what's really important is to find the phrases that resonate with you. When I first started practicing metta, I love this idea of like that feeling of a cool drink on a hot summer day. And so I would say like, oh, may I feel refreshed, like a cool water. And that's what resonated in my spirit. And it made it so much powerful, more powerful when you offer it from that place. So come up with your own words. You know, maybe joy doesn't suit you, but maybe, you know, something else does. The second thing, which I learned from Sharon Salzberg, is amazing. She's had a whole career teaching loving kindness, and she said, set it to music. You know, sometimes putting it to a ditty can help you like really metabolize it and really resonate even more powerfully. You know, it might be like happy birthday. May you feel joy and ease. May you be happy and strong, you know, whatever the thing is. I'll sing you a little ditty of mine and then I'll close it out. So the practice I use is, may I feel joy and ease. May I be safe. May I feel healthy and strong. And may we all be free. So sometimes putting it to music is like helps it to land. Welcome back, everybody. It's turning nighttime here, and now I look dark. How was that? Is it nice to be in conversation, I imagine. So I'm going to get this bell together and then ask folks, as we move towards closing, I would like to offer this dedication of merit. It's a practice that acknowledges that in Sangha together, we have created some merit just in our practice. And so I'll close out with this kind of ritual, and then that'll be it. So, any final thoughts, questions, reflections? You might think of a nice long spine if that feels good, or if you want to lie down, just getting, familiar again, presencing our awareness of the body. Another deep breath in and out. Invite you to kind of comb back through these recent times, right? What was it like to log in, to have made space for connecting tonight and not sure exactly what it was going to be like? We came together and heard a little bit from Emiko about the practice and Spirit Rock and a little introduction from Patrick. Then we were in practice together, this mindful awareness intention, anchoring in the breath or the body, and all that happens in that practice. And then we were these musings around wise speech and turning the heat up on the practice and noticing, in conversation with a pair, just about what it looks like to turn the heat up, or in the group meditation of metta to really try on a deep practice. All of that happened tonight. Just noticing the sweet questions and answers and connection that we're sharing and reflecting on. All of that work generates merit. When practice together on this journey, we generate this merit. And in this ritual, I take a moment to acknowledge the deep suffering in the world, the disconnection and delusion that proliferates through our world. And in this moment, I want to take a moment to just really call to our hearts the merit that we've generated together. And may we offer this merit in an expansive way. May this merit bring ease of suffering to all of our queer siblings, brothers, sisters, gender nonconforming. May we offer the merit of this blessing to all of those experiencing transphobia, racism, misogyny. May we offer this merit to those beings that are suffering in hunger, in pain. And may we offer the blessings and the merit of our practice together to all beings in every direction, without exception, to the cessation of suffering for all.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.